members have been brought up into much committee substitute presentation. Ed Mason, welcome, Mr. Mason, staff to Representative Kent, and Lee P. Tobin, staff to Senator Bennett, are available in the room to answer questions. And as we continue with the amendments, we also have Deborah Will, Operations Manager for D, and Lizette Quincy, Director of Innovation and Education Excellence for D. Thank you both for being on with us. I would like to just thank you, Senator Katie Rodlande, for being with us. Thank you for this. Yes, you can see, so thank you. Providing follow to a question on Monday, November 94, the department's responses and distributed to committee members' desk. And three remaining amendments, along with three that we tabled yesterday. We will use the handwritten number at the top of our page as our reference. And I just wanted to remind members that we have a short time period this morning that we're working on this, so we will have about 15 minutes at 8:25, we will recess till the 8:30 meeting time to continue this, and we will move into the finance subcommittee. So, let's begin. Did you guys have any comments before we started? Thank you. So,
that are low-serving, low-performing, and integrated districts. It's critical to make sure that And we had the pictures and it was confident and people was in the bed praying and we were come to the court and kill the school and pictures and stuff. It is much of what we see in rural Alaska, and I don't know about that, I don't want to be one to touch board and that, but we've certainly heard it from other legislators, whether in the same campus committee or from this board or in this community itself in years past. One of the concerns is teacher recruitment and retention in rural Alaska, the conditions that they have for the high school community or on the short term, they certainly don't build back the next thing in that relationship with the students to be able to make sure that they can carry the burden and help give them the support they need. So, I mean, that is a better system for working with the students and able to hear from the teachers and make decisions and all around everybody else.
To get educated in our
splitting their time between two schools. And I know only one place.
Thank you, Chair. The plan would be to begin hiring and training when you need to be implemented in the school, knowing that each year we would build capacity and add more reading specialists. As you know, approximately 20 or 30 reading specialists at one time would be challenging given some teacher shortage issues. Start with the pool and then add, start with 10 to 20 in the first year, and then add each year to build capacity. So, if that work out for the first year, we start with a little, add over 25 schools, a little bit by 5% schools, and make sure that there's a training reading specialist to support the schools, and then add capacity each year.
From an answer, I've been reminded that please learn how to speak. Identify yourself before speaking because it's really helpful to our recording secretary to make sure she has on file who is speaking to the amendment. So thank you. And I've got a question when you speak to either to Ms. Riddle or Ms. McKenzie. Are you familiar with the Southeast reading specialist training program in the School of Education there? And if you are, how would you work with them to train reading specialists right here in Southeast Arizona?
Thank you, Chair.
Is
this information to the Director of the Ministry of Education at the Public Department? I'm familiar with UAS. Many specialist programs. I'm not that familiar with UAS. The department is committed to working with the university system to provide input and mentorship and training with a lot of teachers to secure a leading specialist endorsement and the training that is needed for that program.
Thank you. As soon as this bill passes, we'll have the legislature to get to work on training our own, as well as, of course, training teachers that are out there in these additional skills. Thank you. Well, thank you, Robert Dunn, Mr. Mason, and Ms. Dunn. If you have any information to add in the bill context about this, I would appreciate that information. Thank you, David Chair. Would you jump in front of me, please? So the department reading program that's on page 22 was crafted in the way that it is, which is providing direct support from the two school districts in direct response to the 2001 lawsuit. Over the lawsuit, the legislation stated that it is the responsibility of the legislature to support education. In doing so, it needs to support the Department of Education. Without additional capacity to the department, the program is established to assist local and school districts who are relying on the grant. School districts will be asked to work with the not only to develop how their program is offered in the community, but also work with these reading specialists will be fully supported by DEED. That reading specialist will be hired by DEED, trained by DEED, provided elsewhere and accommodations by DEED. None of that burden will be borne by the district. This also assists in ensuring that the district retains additional capacity and that they have capacity later on, which would cover the form of having to administer a program and having to find or having to find housing as an individual, having to compete with other districts and having to hire as an individual. So the reason the department reading program is structured the way that it is that in our response to that, we will also have to provide additional capacity in the program to support our surrounding schools.
Mr. Mason, just a second. Thank you.
that's different here. This is for us to say, computer entry encryption. This is a capability of the computer. Right now, we have our desk worker who is limited. So this is a lot of deep to step in and have control to help fix the situation. Getting the computer, the scanners, they're familiar back again, and they're going to fix the situation. So for me, this would be a good time for the problem that Dave has as this reading bill progresses. So, in the next one, I will start the speaker.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Brown, I think that's a question for you on the phone. Is the Department of Ag any special security or are there any specials out there that the Department would be able to cover up and provide you with?
That is
true. Specialists that have failed right off the bat, I think the forces that they're putting in place don't let the event that they can deal with the situation with that. But I'm sure they'd like to see far more maybe specialists already out there. I know that the University of Alaska has put together programs to help train educators in the position of work and allow them to be capable of best at the local school level because there's an individual specific decision. Certainly already continuing to exacerbate the problem of teacher retention and teacher connection with students who are in Alaska. But not having them stay, having an itinerant teacher or meeting specialist throughout the state, but then with my advantage is that we're going to put a system in place that's going to fail right off the bat because we already have one meeting specialist and we have put at least 10 and we're going to be 25 the first of the month. So with that, and then sharing the video. System is about to fail immediately, and I'm sure we'll get as strong as we can so that we can hopefully see some success from not having to back and forth with the specialist to begin with. Thank you very much. So it's probably an effective.
Thank you. That's not good.
All right, thank you for the record. My name is Dennis Chesterman. I currently work as a climate language teacher in the TCLL program in the kindergarten first grade classroom. However, we're fluent in the program and we're beginning the second, third grade and the fourth and fifth grade classrooms as well. It is a chance for the opportunity to be here with you today. Remaining in general is a very daunting task as a teacher to teach students, so I really appreciate the time and effort that is gone into this bill. And again, now there are several sections that really stood out to me, and the first thing is the idea of having the entire state having a system to build by to teach the science of reading within five of reading would be huge. And in conjunction with that, the other part that stuck out to me was the parents as teachers and having the parents involved and really being a part of that whole learning process. So section four, I think, was an area that stood out to me because we are able, here in general, in the TCLL program, we are able to work with oral reading, or oral language foundation, and then tie that into reading. But one of the things that's really with our program is we have started getting an influx of students who are coming from the Language Nest, which is a preschool program that is run by the Clinton and Highland community, or the tribe. So we've got several students who are in our program now who are coming from these earlier educational foundations. So that part really stuck out to me because we need those younger kids to come in with some of those foundational skills already, and then just continue feeding that growth of language development and bringing it as a developer. Let's see, I think the next thing that struck me was section five and how the alignment of terminology would bring a lot of continuity into what teachers are doing and really about that. The section nine part of that I talked about earlier with the parents as teachers and having it this statewide program can really facilitate the community that it really takes to engage our learners in reading. So I really appreciate that part. One of the things we're doing here in Kenya are some of our students who were teaching our Clipit Culture, Language, and Literacy program at Harborview are involved with or have been involved with the Baby Reading program through CLSK Heritage. And that has been a really great experience for students and for families as well. Let's see where I have my notes next. Section 13, I think, was talking about establishing some high-quality programs for 4 to 5 year-olds. And again, that's in fact that is a very needed component when we're talking about incoming kindergartners and meeting their needs as readers and literacy learners. So, I think one of my questions that I had in this section is, how is this going to happen? Who's going to be doing this? Is it going to be something that's led by individual communities? And or is it something that the state is going to have for communities and school districts to access? Section 15 there, I think, really addresses the big five of reading, right? So, excuse me. Having the state establishing some standards for us to go through as teachers of the eighth, because I know there are not some of the same opportunities in some of the maybe smaller villages or smaller communities or some of the more rural communities. And so I think having that whole science of reading being statewide would be huge. And I wonder how this is going to pan out, especially within a school district where professional development times that you have throughout the year are very limited. And as native language teachers and in our TCLL program, we have been afforded some time by the district to work with our language and the curriculum that the curriculum we're writing to have adopted by the school board. However, it's just a little bit of time, so I'm wondering how this will be executed, because it really does take a lot. But with that said, I'm really happy to see this in the bill as well. Let's see here. One of the other sections that spoke to me, see, I wrote down my notes through the cultural lens, and let me kind of reflect back on what that was about. That's another program that CLS Narratives Institute runs, and I think it's really crucial for any teachers in Alaska to come in knowing about the place that they're in and the people who come from that place. And being tied to that place also helps a lot. So giving teachers any of those tools that are needed for just being a teacher in a particular place would be huge. I took the cultural events course 2 years ago during the pandemic, during the lockdown. And I was born and raised here in Juneau. I went through the Juneau School District. I went to Bishop Valley Elementary. I went to Marie Drake Middle School, and I graduated in 95 from Juneau Douglas High School. So I've been around a bunch of people. I've been around my own family from half to half. I've been to many communities. And when I was seeing this course through the cultural lens, I just kept getting these big aha moments about ways to incorporate more of who we are and what we do. And I teach in the Clinic Culture Language and Literacy program. So it was a really great experience for me, even though I've been teaching for 16 years now, and I've been surrounded by my culture since I was raised. I've been learning Clinic since 96. And having this opportunity to meet with other educators and to go through this kind of professional development, this kind of hard course, was very, very beneficial to me. And I'm a Clinic person. And so I think anything that can be done for teachers to help facilitate their own knowledge of the place that they're working in and the people who they might be working with is going to only benefit and enhance and enrich the teachings that the teachers are able to bring into their classroom environment. That to me is really huge, because I know there are many teachers in Canada who wish they had more opportunities like that. So to see something like this in the bill is really promising, and I hope that it becomes a norm in our state for incoming teachers to have, not just incoming teachers, but especially incoming teachers, to have this opportunity of learning more about the place that they're working in. So I think that in a nutshell, is my thoughts, reactions, and my review of the bill and the reactions that came after. Jane, thank you very much for allowing me this time to testify, and I'm not sure if anyone might have any clarifying questions for me, but I think we'll turn the floor back over.
Thank you, Mr. Jester. I was hoping that you could share from your experience. The bill calls for reading to be done the size of reading, as you've talked about, but it also says you can be culturally relevant. If you could give us the committee some examples of how you do that, I would find it helpful myself.
Yes. So for the record, this is my structure. So through chair member story, is that how you say it?
Yeah, that's good.
Thank you. Through the chair member story, I would love to address this question. I apologize for my assumption of not understanding where I'm coming from. I realize now that there are some facts with what you might know and what I do. So, in our student culture, language, and literacy program, we are able to teach language through Indian and through English. And so, we do a lot of, we did the big five of science of reading almost daily with our students in English and in Indian. So, we have an alphabet that has been developed, and the poster that goes with it. We've got books that are being, little primer books for early emerging readers that are being translated into Thinkit by some of our elders, or a few of our team members translate some things into Thinkit as well. And then we use those in our instruction with literacy. And it's definitely tied to place. Our language is tied to this place. There are many, many things which come from our language that are also tied to our land and to the things from this land. We utilize concepts like our food, our ceremonies, our kinship system as ways of things for teaching, and so a lot of our early primer books are really tied to students and who they are and the experiences that they might be having within their own communities outside of school. For instance, every fall we go out and pick blueberries, and when we come back, we make jam, we'll do recipes. So if I'm in Lincoln, we will take some of the berries and share them with our elders. And then students will always write about this field of experience. And so there are so many different ways that students are able to engage in literacy through a cultural activity such as berry picking and then sharing some of our assistance with our community members. I'm not sure if that might speak to your question, but that's what comes to mind.
Thank you, Mr. Chester, for making yourself available and all of the work that you do through the TCL program. You talked about the support for that program, the history of it, how it came to be. So if you could explain that a little bit better, and then you might have a follow-up question related to that.
Certainly, why did I ask you to say your name again? I'm sorry.
It's okay, Representative Zelkowski.
Zelkowski?
Okay.
This is Vince Chester, Attorney Chair, Representative of Zelkowski out of Snipes, so sorry. Our program began 21 years ago, and it was intended to be an immersion program where students would be immersed in projects throughout the entire day. And as time went on, the forming team realized early on that teaching through the language was more challenging and maybe not as attainable as hoped initially. However, language was used still early on in the program. We've moved on from doing a lot of individual words and more stuff in English to actually teaching content through Thinkit. This is still in its emergent stages, so it's taken a good couple of decades for the current team to be where we are, and we can't be where we are had it not been for the founders of this program, Katie Nancy, Kitty Douglas, Kitty Nancy Douglas, Rocky Eddie's sisters, were the founders basically of this program along with the Sue Austin Heritage Institute. And this came out of a need that CLSA found when they had a study done that students who come from our backgrounds aren't as successful as other students. So looking at what are the reasons and trying to increase our students' success overall. And so over the years, the program has been funded by numerous grants. It's been funded through Sea Alaska Heritage Institute. Global Heritage Foundation has funded us. The Taylor School District has picked up part of the funding. And currently, our team is now funded under the Taylor School District because our last grant was not approved. They are resubmitting the grant again a second time, and hopefully that will be approved this time so that we can continue working on the curriculum that we're writing so that it can be hopefully adopted by the Taylor School Board. So our program currently has three foreign language teachers. One is stationed in each of the classrooms. We have three classrooms. We have a kindergarten first grade classroom, we have a second third grade classroom, and we have a fourth fifth grade classroom. So there's a classroom teacher and a foreign language teacher in each class. And then we also have two elders who work within our program who are able to be there for 3 to 4 hours a day, and they work in both of them work in all three of the classrooms. We have a really strong foundation of singing and dancing. We have a really great presence in the community when it comes to that. So I think that, in a nutshell, is a brief history of our program.
If you could, you speak to one of the big elements of HMS 164 is reading intervention and assessing the progress of students in the evidence-based strategies as it's related to fluency and proficiency in reading. Can you talk about the work that's been done through TCA level in developing culturally relevant assessments of your students? What are the instructions of that look like? How do you measure the literacy and progress of learning of your students through a variety of tools that have been developed from your program over the last couple of decades and things that look like?
Yes, certainly. So currently, we are using the Taylor School District assessments that we use, the digital benchmarks, and we go through those processes for English, for cricket. What we are doing is we have a phonics screener that we use. We have high frequency, early words for people in classrooms. We've got a start on the world influences and events. So we're trying to mimic some of the things that are done in the Western system, but using cricket language. And so, for instance, if I want to assess sounds and whether or not students know sounds and cricket, I have my sound cards, they're 50 of them because we have 50 sounds. And so we go through them and assess what sounds do they know, and then that's kind of make them words. So it's very similar to what is being done in English. A lot of our content that we use to teach is place-based and culturally relevant to cliches. So our assessments that we develop for cliche language obviously have words that are either in cliche or they are learning the English word, but it's an object from our culture. I'm not sure if that answers the question.
Yes, we will have you in it, and thank you for that. Do I have any questions at this time?
All my questions about assessment.
meeting structure and thinking, is it representative of how things have been? Okay, yes. So, yes, it is to answer your question. I think not all things are easily translated. For instance, I have developed some of these assessments that we're using, so they've come from my hands and my writing. But that has come from my experiences and claims that I've had through the Jewish School District and especially through Ted Wilson and the background of our literacy coach, Missy McMillan. So they were a part of our team at Glacier Valley, and they are in the system for reading instruction in English that was used K through 2. And I had gone through 4 years of teaching reading and not really understanding it myself very well, even though I had a master's degree in teaching background. So that's one of the reasons I think it is very vital for her and the plan to be something that is just taught by everyone. Because once I realized that's what I was missing from my instruction, I saw two of our students I had from kindergarten and first grade, and I looked them into second grade. I saw them go from reading at a kindergarten level 4 to reading on grade level in November as a second grader. So they made that much growth in a semester with more. But it was because of my approach as a teacher and understanding the science of reading more, and also using a system that our whole primary wing was using together was a very cohesive unit. So before I learned all of this, I went in kicking and screaming, I went into the training. I thought it was my birthday, and I didn't want to get hurt. Anyway, after I started listening and hearing what the presenter had and seeing what she wanted us to try out, I thought, oh my gosh, we need this for Clinkit. I can make this for Clinkit. So after several years of teaching through this system, I finally sat down and started hacking at it on my own. And so I mimicked the 4 o'clock screen that we were using in the English, and I started developing it for Clinkit. And that's when I realized it can't just be exactly what English is. English and Clinkit are very different, and we have our own systems. And so once I realized what our own systems were, I put that into the system of the phonics, if that makes sense.
Jeremy, thank you for your share. Thank you. You said you've been teaching for 4 years, about 116 years into it now. And you were talking about seeing and basic structures throughout the school and looking at, is it sort of a discovery or if you call it a cluster, is it sort of a charter school for like a language specifically, and which might not be the right exact word for the structure of your school. But it sounds like it's an overall approach within that school to develop the language and the cultural understanding. Is that accurate?
Yes, it's, I think it's over. Fully focused on the English. But yes, we do definitely utilize our own cultural worldviews through our teaching.
I apologize.
We see them do it every day in our classrooms. It's a portion of our morning meetings usually. We also spend 5 to 10 minutes of our language lesson, especially now that Celebration 2022 will happen this summer. Our students are part of that celebration, and so we start preparing them around the summer here with songs that they are going to be performing in front of large audiences. So that's a part of our instruction now as well. So singing and dancing is definitely a part of what we do. It's a part.
There are many more things. Beautiful. Thank you. I apologize for putting it together. I don't understand the difference. Do you use it in your math curriculum? Do you use taking the cultural learning in your math curriculum and in your social studies in order to approach and fulfill the other standards that are required by the district and state?
Yes, we do. So we have, for instance, we have our social studies and science curriculum that we use the state and test, do you stand or test the backbone and let me pull in thinking concepts to teach to meet those criteria? For instance, in social studies, we might be learning about the distribution of resources, and we might use hearing as the backbone of that social studies unit, and then we'll pull in the science of hearing and the life cycle of hearing, and even definitely in math, we're using our language. Especially in the earlier grades, there's so many different components of our morning meeting and some of our routines with the calendar and clock and money. And, you know, we teach those concepts and you look at them.
You were talking about the brick game and your students when you were working on the science of reading. And when you learn about the science of reading and what it takes to kind of the cultural development curriculum that you use in that science of reading, do you feel that in your expertise would it have been effective if there was not the entire skeleton and structure around the rest of the school that utilizes teacher culture? So do you think just learning about the reading aspect of it would have been as much of a breakthrough to make that progress you saw from the beginning of the school year to the number of people was important and credible, or not, about all of the entire school structure around it?
Well, for me, I think as a college student, anything that could help tie me to who I am would have been beneficial. The science of reading, I think, is crucial for students to increase student success and to have culturally relevant materials as a teacher to teach the art of reading is very beneficial to our students.
My last question I think we should ask. You've been working with this program going on for 21 years. You've been there for 16. Do you think other districts would be able to pick up this work right away around the state, or do you think that if you have the capacity to be able to do the same work and develop these same assessments that you do, whether it be from West Boston or New York or any of the other districts on the state?
I'm a little reluctant to speak for them, but from my own experience, it takes time and it takes resources and a team of people to do it, whether that's two people or 10, but having another person to work with and developing these curricula or these frameworks for students is very important. And having professional development that's surrounding this is extremely helpful. It's like the on-the-job training is some of the best experiences I've had as a teacher, and that's what I learned the most myself.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
Mr.
Testing, if you have more questions, I can help to stay on the line.
Yes, I do.
Thank you,
Madam Chair. This is more of a kind of pertaining for myself. You mentioned Big Five when you were starting up. I'm just curious what exactly that Big Five is.
So, Big Five in reading are early literacy skills. So, we're talking about sounds and learning the levers of the sounds, so phonemic awareness and phonics, and then fluency, so being able to read a passage as if it's being spoken right now and not copying words right now, and then building on comprehension and understanding what's being read. That's four. And then learning other words, vocabulary words. The old reading program that I used in English Rally, where I learned all of this, it was called robust vocabulary. And that, you know, like if we're studying weather, we might have snowstorm as one of the words, or blizzard, and then, you know, in first grade, teaching a student how to read the word and understand it, and then teaching them also the kind of words that go for those.
Okay.
So, what do you think of your
thank you very much. I just think it was basically the clarification for each other. I appreciate that. That's absolutely.
Thanks for asking me. I'll keep you on the phone. So thank you for the question. Is that representative? Okay. Our program is a lottery-based program, so anyone can apply to this program in the district, and they get put into the lottery system. And when a classroom has an opening, then a student is placed into that classroom. Many different things come into consideration when that choice is made. Trying to have a balance is the goal, but also to be equitable at the same time. So there are different things that are looked at. Siblings, when you're in the program, you get a point, right? So however many points you have puts you up on that list, and that's how the students are entered. Our program is basically, it's only within a school. Our TCL program is only 3 classrooms right now. And they're multi-level, multi-age classrooms. And we are a part of the Harborview Elementary School. And so one of our goals is to be able to extend the own school and have our own principal and with our own curriculum. And so that's something that our team is working on, and that's one of the hopes that we have with this grant and to ask the Heritage Institute to plan forward is to continue the work that the last 3-year grant cycle helped fund.
Did that answer your question? It does. I have a further question. I have heard you consider it to be a language immersion program.
That's the other part. I think we spend a good quality of our day using our language, and that's different from day to day, it's different from classroom to classroom. But I know for myself, I could spend probably 2 hours out of the day teaching and cleaning to the classroom. So, yes, so a lot of the thing that basically everything we do in as they get older, especially we have both reading and English. So like right now the second, third grade classroom is learning about the environment and workforce succession and geology. So they're learning about those terminologies and some of the verbs that go with them included. So being down in the language lesson and then the classroom teacher is helping teach those concepts in science.
Find that your colleagues that are actively included or using the science of reading in their K-3 instruction, the way you have found it to benefit your teaching.
Within writing, within our TCLO program.
No, you're not finding colleagues. Not including teaching colleagues. You're teaching only part of the K-4 population in your school. The other part of the English-speaking part of your K-4 population are really using the science of reading in their instruction.
Yes, we teach those five concepts in each of the sections.
Great, thank you so much for
absolutely. And that's the program that we fit in K through fifth grade.
Thank you, Coach Hester. Mr. Chester, thank you for bringing me today and that's very exciting what you're doing and what you can as an emerging school. There's quite a few questions, but I guess this opens up the conversation of what kind of success you have in your school. Of whether, we can look at private schools or we look at charter schools. With what you're doing, you guys are kind of setting a precedent for that. And I guess my question is, how do we work this, let's just say, in sort of villages where maybe the native language isn't spoken as much today as it used to be? And it just makes so much harder to actually do something like you're doing. So I just like your thoughts on that.
So, as a representative group,
correct.
Okay. So, I think for languages where there are little or no speakers, the community, it's really up to them to decide what to do. What I would do if that is in that case is I would go to some of the resources that perhaps the less native language center may have. Or contacting professors of languages who might have contacts from people who might still speak those languages to see if there's any way to involve them. Another thing that I would do is to look at some of the dictionaries and other resources that are available for those languages and start incorporating those into my teaching instead of reading Little Red Riding Hood, for instance, or if the textbook says to learn about farms and farm animals, then we're going to learn about the animals that our people bought and hunt, or what did they use to hunt, maybe, and utilize that as a way to engage students, regardless of whether or not someone can speak the language. There are students who connect with the culture on a cellular level, on a level that maybe can't even be measured. I know growing up here in Juneau, I felt a lot of loss, and I remember thinking that the language was dead. That's what I thought and felt growing up, and it wasn't until like 1996 when Patty Atkinson at UAS stopped me during my transition from college class to college class and said, you should stay here in the fall and work. Like, they're going to start teaching you that as a four-credit course. And that basically got me on this journey of learning language. Because I thought, wow, I have a chance to learn what my grandpa learned. I can speak things like my grandpa, that inspired me. I didn't learn thinking growing up. I learned some words. I learned a couple phrases, and then when I started learning to speak thinking, I learned how to say those things correctly because I was saying them in an English tongue, right? But if I didn't
didn't know some of the things I knew in English growing up as a kid, like dry fish is one of our foods that we eat. We're going to go and buy some dry fish from our relative that's coming down from Yakutat. And, you know, having that connection to place and having that connection to some of our resources that our ancestors utilized really, it resonated with me. I think that's one of the reasons I'm here in Juneau to this day. Because I really love the sunshine.
I do,
and I really appreciate that. And I grew up in Northland, and those connections are so important to the expression of the plant. And I live with another French family, and I find it all the time. But we had, even though I'm not native from Northland, we had people coming in and teach words. I heard the first word right now. And just recently, I'm living just kind of in the wilderness. Upper Canada dialect book, which is 648 pages, it's in the copyright 2020. So it's relatively new, and it's kind of overwhelming to think that we can somehow make that into a class, which is the area which is I'm actually, I just bought three more copies. I have four daughters that are Upper Canada at their baskets. So they're all going to copy. I'm going to leave it up to them. Their grandma's still speaking it. And I'm kind of going to leave it up to them. They're going to have that dictionary. And hopefully they immerse themselves in it. It was really cool looking for it. But I don't know words. But I don't have that dialect to speak it. And I'm hoping that maybe with this book, we can kind of figure it out similar to what you're doing. So thank you. Again, I really appreciate it. Through the chair, thank you for coming down and continuing discussing. I'm just trying to get a feel for how this works. The program, do I understand it correctly, is pre-K, that is 4-year-olds through fourth grade? Is that correct? So our program is kindergarten through fifth grade. We have a tribe. So it's 3- and 4-year-olds, maybe some 5-year-olds, where they speak Thinkit and use Thinkit as the mode of teaching. And they try to use as much Thinkit as possible, so it's not quite full immersion, but it's pretty close. And so those kids who go through that preschool are not trying to lure them towards, hey, there's this pretty culture language literacy program, maybe. Are you interested in applying to research and we can be a part of this to continue that foundation that has been laid in the early stages of school?
So, I think you mentioned that the people that come in, the students that come into your program, have exposure to the language and the culture before they get there. Rather than if they wanted to go through kindergarten.
Yeah, so with the exception of some of the older waves, like we just had a student in fifth grade who moved, his family moved at winter break, and so now we have an opening at that grade level. And so if anyone puts an application in, then that student will most likely get in. And that student might not have a language foundation. However, family who is applying for that student, for their child to be in our program, is applying to our program because they know about our program and they want their child to be a part of this movement. And most of the families that apply, wonder what brought in from that average kindergartner, like they come in the later grades, and those students typically aren't connected to a family that is connected to our culture and is around cultural activities.
And then, if I have a follow-up, just to clarify that, typically, people have some exposure to the culture of the language, but that's not necessarily a prerequisite.
Correct.
Right. So,
It's a more root process if they have previous experience or exposure than that is basically like a joint. So that is the way that you can monitor what's happening and know if they are involved or not. So there is a way, we're not going to deny someone because they aren't. Haven't been involved, but we try to make sure that people are reading that same level of learning. So I'm closing my career to the family as well. Some turnover, we have some non-Plinkett teachers as classroom teachers, but that didn't degrade the program, you know, maintaining it. I think it's good to have non-natives being a part of this movement as well. And I started back in 1996, we need everyone we possibly can to learn Plinkett because back in 1996, we had well over 500 speakers. And this was when I first started learning Plinkett in college. And today, you know, we're lucky if we can have 50. And so the coming and going of teachers in the program, I think it could have been a lot worse than it has been. But I think everyone who has been involved in the program has put their heart and soul into everything that has been done. Providing rich experiences for students and life, basically. We are very community-oriented. We go out into the community. We're seen publicly a lot. We're often known as the red shirts because oftentimes we'll all be wearing red shirts when we go out together. So I think everyone who's come before us has had the same intent to increase our student success. And whether or not that's in Plinkett or English, it should be both. But there's an especially early on 20 initiative to increase student success in reading. So there was a big push for early literacy skills in reading English, and that has developed over time now for us to be doing both.
Thank you, Lecturer. Thank you for that response. I felt from the rural area of the Rocky Delta region, which experiences a disproportionate percent of turnover teachers I reach. And so I appreciate hearing your perspective on the importance of having even non-native teachers in that environment. I'd be curious to hear, and I appreciate hearing your support for the language of the bill, really consumer. I was hoping you could speak to how your program has prepared Native teachers to work with Native students in a Native environment with language skills around the students, whether they're in Lincoln or in English. How have you set teachers for success in that way?
So I think a lot of the more of the turnover is occurred before I was part of the program. This is my fifth year at Harbor View. I've had a good previous portion of my teaching career at Glacier Valley, where I was the only non-Utah collegiate in my classroom because I was an only collegiate teacher. So, with regards to having, because I've known several of the non-Native teachers who have taught within this program, I could have applied for the program, but I wanted to be able to instill a student at the school I went to, and there were other reasons I didn't apply to teach them all back in those days when I could have. I think that the teachers who did get hired into our program were hired as teachers saying, you know, you're coming into this, and this is a thinking language program, and we use culturally responsive curriculum and place-based learning. And so some of these things might be questioned during the interview process, right? And so that's one of the ways that we can hire someone who has the qualifications that we're looking for. Whether or not we do any training with them, I can't speak to that because I don't think that we provide any training for PCLL teachers. The trainings that we do go through are video school district trainings. So, when we're talking about professional development and things like that, one of the things we did at the start of this school year was ask our teaching and learning director if we could use one of the professional development days to continue our work that we were working on over the summer, which was really pressing work that had to get executed in order for it to be presented to the school board. And so, you know, all of these people, we know each other, we've worked with each other for several years, and so having that trust and that confidence from our administrators is huge, and being able to have this flexibility as we get culture, language, and literacy program teachers to come together and to continue our work is crucial. Otherwise, we could have been sitting in a district training where we would be thinking, oh, we could be working on this for our students right now, and it might not necessarily match our needs what the district is having us with. So I think it is super important for our districts to honor the work that needs to be done. And with the 3-year grant that we did have, part of our grant was to have training through the dual language system down in New Mexico. So for a couple of years, we went through training down in New Mexico through dual language and trying to learn that system and see how we can utilize some of the best things from their systems and what we're already doing.
Thank you for that perspective. You know, the lens within which we're looking at this bill is really establishing statewide reach, and with your position, you just commented the importance of school districts to make sure that teachers are prepared to teach in these various environments. Would it be your perspective that ensuring that there are statewide expectations for preparing teachers to teach in a culturally diverse environment, whether it be differences in grasping concepts and understanding and all of this place-based knowledge that has made your program so successful, would be an important inclusion to protect within any legislation moving forward.
I think that's crucial. If I were to apply for a job out in the Miami Delta, I would need to really learn about the place where I'm going to. I have some understandings of that region. I spent a couple of weeks up in Costa Rica during my MHC practicum. So, and one of my
answer is really ingrained. Right? It's just in the culture, especially in spirituality. So, you know, if I were to go and get a talk there, I would want to get a breath of my mouth and my hair, regardless of whether or not the district had that happen. Perhaps my own passion, I guess, but I would hope that the state would make it a criteria for having a job. If we're going to help meet students' needs, we need to understand and connect with them. And the way we can do that is by understanding and connecting with the community in which they live in. And if I'm a part of that community, then I feel that's a part of my job. But it's helpful to have those parameters from the lovers, right? If you have those guidelines and those boundaries and those expectations on us, then we can meet that challenge, right? So that kind of made me a little anxious because that's a really daunting task if we're looking at many, many students because there are many students who are on grade level. And for students in our program, we have our system that means within the school district that responds to intervention that are AI and having three tutors and, you know, utilizing our students' data and what they show us that they know and forming our groups based on that data and really trying to pinpoint where our needs are and meeting those needs so that we can continue building on their knowledge base. And so one of the things that we are able to do because of the team that we have is to, for instance, we have what's called WIN time, what I need. WIN is an acronym for what I need. So each student is placed into a group, and we divide this, the amount of students based on the number of teachers we have, so we can keep our groups really small. So we might have 4 to 6 groups with each teacher, because we have a large team. There are like 12 or 13 of us. So we can really spread our students from different classrooms around where we need to. For students who aren't in special education, I think we really need to make sure that we have systems that are feasible and usable. I hope that this isn't going to put a bunch of extra strain on teachers. Because I think if we're using that, a triangle approach of the response to intervention, the first, second, third level students and placing them into that system, we can better pinpoint their needs and meet those needs. I think it takes a lot of funding and it takes a lot of staffing in order to do what our team is doing, and so I'm wondering if it, how feasible it will be for some of the smaller communities where we don't have a large team to do such a thing. But I also know how important it is to have this system for students who are lacking in skills and strategies and maybe.
Well, thank you for that. I could ask you a lot of questions about the reading level. We've come for a long time. And the program is growing more, it gets to be
sharing with us what you try to do through incorporating language, because it's not just asking for it, but it's culturally relevant. And there will be a stakeholder group who will be working and kind of developing this. And that's a bold choice, but a very important one. So, thank you. And I don't know, we did have some people who wanted to ask a question. I don't know if they still did. I think there was a rep.
I think we're asking questions a little bit for the district. I will formulate questions and if I can get his contact information, I'll send us to get it. Yes.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for your time today. I really appreciate you sharing your perspective, the perspective of teacher in the classroom.
Absolutely. I'm pleased to share my email with all of the team member, and I'm willing to answer emails, or if you want a phone call chat, then I'm able to do that as well.
Thank you very much, Ms. Chase.
All right, Ms. Chase, have a great evening.
Thank you. Thank you. That was very informative, and I could have asked a number of questions. If you do have some questions, please pass them on to our office, and we will pass them on to Mr. Chester and see if he can respond and return it to the donors. It is 20 to 5. We have 6 minutes left. Mr. Commander, I hope that will be a little bit longer because I just thought it was informative. So, I think I have to deal with the members. I think a lot of the central staff to that, I believe. And we are at amendment number 16, which was offered by Ms. Zeta. I would like to have that amendment. And so we are now at amendment number 17, which I believe is by Rep. Zelkowski. Do I have a motion? Certainly, thank you. Mr. Mason from 24, because we are working on House Bill 164. So I am, and now we are going to our first table amendment, which was by Rep. Hopkins, number 4.
I move to take item number 4 off the table.
Is there an objection?
Thank you. At this time, I did not move the item number 4 before the presentation, so I also will not be moving item number 4 at this time.
Item 5?
I think I moved it forward.
Oh, okay. So item number 4 is withdrawn.
No, I forgot.
Thank you. That brings us to amendment number 5, Rep. Zelkowski. Do I have a motion to eliminate number 5? Okay, for purposes of discussion. Thank you, Madam Chair. You mentioned that we have leadership from Dean on the line. I was hoping that the department could speak to their definition of the their definition and understanding of literacy
in the framework of this particular bill. Yes, today we have Susan McKinsey, Director of Innovation and Education, excellent community, and Deborah Riddle, excuse me, Union Operation Manager from DADE. Are you referring to the definition that we have on the end? One page, what page was that? On the goal? Sorry, I should have done my work here. So, you're actually speaking to just generally the department's perspective on that. Thank you. Did you have a question on that form? Who wants to take that? Director McKinsey or Ms. Riddle? Actually, I'd like to move Discipline 1 to Amendment 5 to connect the intention behind my amendment, striking the term literacy and replacing it with culturally relevant curriculum, instruction, and assessment, and adding in after Indigenous. Culturally and linguistically diverse. So it would read the Department of Education Early Development or Commission and Reviewing Research on Best Practices for Improving Culturally Relevant Curriculum Instruction and Assessment of Indigenous Culturally and Linguistically Diverse Students with the remainder of the language being changed. This is not as organic, but I feel like we simply just ran out of time with working on the bill last spring. And it didn't really reflect the intention of the intention of the amendment, which is really for deep education and review research, ensuring that students, collaborative students, students who are culturally diverse, students who are linguistically diverse, that the department is identifying best practices on how to make sure curriculum instruction and assessment will be bringing into the classroom. Thank you. Any other discussion?
Madam Chair, I just want to be sure that we get the whole words right. So if you make our motion, could just submit it in writing to us so that we can it straight.
Just like the comments that the director has to make, I would ask to bring my purple for me. Instead of raising the committee's hand for the other meeting today.
Okay.
Is that stated there in the motion?
That works for me.
And then I would move to table my conceptual amendment on number 5. Thank you. I have a question. Director McKinsey, part of this, in Alaska, we have been working to have culturally relevant curriculum assessments to meet a variety of our students' needs. Does the department have they done other assessments like this before? Does it have these kinds of other review of research on these best practices?
Thank you. Thank you.
And I follow up question to the department. Interested in understanding whether Deed has any OS in the follow-up to our other office question, whether Deed has OS coming up in which to on staff who advise about the differences in language was not in the actual in Mr. Chester's testimony that there's not a there's not always an indigenous language to English language equitable translation. And so I'm curious to hear how the department navigates that if there are no native language speakers on staff.
Thank you, Chair. The department does have native speakers, have a native speaker on staff, Bill Isaac. And so we let's keep going and consult with him and have conversations with him.
Question, and you can discuss that question further too. Well, as we discuss this amendment when it comes to November, I think that would be a good time. So, again, we are adjourned at 4:54.